Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things. We don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also our website, drjeanettegallagher.com for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves as we are women. We are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here on Sedona Talk Radio, and we are also now on Pyramid One Network, which is in Australia. Can you believe it? We are expanding our venues. We are now all across the globe in so many different areas, and welcome to all our new listeners. It's going to be an interesting story. Today we're going to talk about breast cancer journey as a graphic narrative. What I have found is that we are really starting to take cancer and breast cancer especially and now say, oh, we've had that experience. Oh, all those people have had that experience. They're all good to go. See, they're outside jogging in their pink. They've all got smiles on. No biggie. You can be able to go right through it and no big deal. I think we are now minimalizing the journey and all of the treatments and therapies and all the pain and suffering that goes on as saying, oh, my neighbor did it, so what? You know, somebody else did it, you'll be fine. And we've really dissed and taken away the journey and the experience and all that goes on with it for each person. We are going to talk about a really graphic journey. Today, Tina Martell, she's a visual artist, and she's also the author of Not in the Pink. And she's really going to be telling us about her personal journey with stage 2 breast cancer. You know, it's all about everything that does go on. We hear these words, and nobody wants to speak them. No one wants to say, oh, I really know what's going on, let me tell you. No one's going to tell you what's really going to go on. They're not going to tell you what it's really all about. They're not going to say how, the good, the bad, and the ugly of it, because then you'll be afraid. But really, isn't the fear sometimes, if you know someone else's journey, it will help let some of that fear ease and say, okay, now I understand, or maybe I'll be able to expect that. And then you're a little bit better prepared, or your thoughts are more, what I say, in line. You're more not scattered out in the fear parameters, and you're able to say, maybe this is something I can do, and I understand how that works. Oh, do you mean when I step forward, my whole body will go forward? Do you mean when I open the door, I go into a hotter room? Or do you mean that when I have this therapy that it might really hurt, or maybe I might just not feel good for a long time? Really, those are things that everybody doesn't want to talk about. And it's almost like we live in this world in healthcare behind this black cloak, you know? Nobody wants to say about all this stuff. And if we really did speak about it, I really think what we would do is we would crush healthcare, is what I would say. Because really, we would realize that everybody's got these experiences going on. And to talk about them makes us all human, but it also helps us connect with each other. The problem is that we put such a lid on it that we walk around like these tin cans, you know, ready to explode all the time. So today, we're taking the lid off of breast cancer. Tina, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I love the whole idea of taking the lid off it and talking about what it's really like.
Yeah, you know, so many times we just don't want to say, you know, oh, well, we're not going to say it or we're not going to talk about it because then it doesn't give it a real value. Or maybe we say, oh, people, I'm embarrassed. I don't want to say anything about it. Or, oh, you know, I already did it. I don't want to relive it. I'm not going to say anything about it. And all of that keeps us so trapped in our dogma. You know, that we can't feel free. If we can't feel free to say what comes up in our mind and in our thoughts, where are we really as humans, right?
And we can't heal. We can't go on. Right. No one really knows what's happening with us. And you said so many poignant things at the beginning. Just saying that we need to talk about it. And if you're going through it, you need to know what could happen. If you have family with you, they need to know what's happening to you. And we're not talking.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly what keeps us trapped. You know, a lot of times everybody has their version of what cancer is. I've been in healthcare since 72, and I'll tell you my version of it. My version of it is it's just stuck energy. It's energy of the cells, and it's just stuck somewhere. And it could be stuck by a physical, mechanical, emotional, spiritual, whatever it is. And they all kind of conjoin together and just create something that just doesn't belong there. And, you know, do we want to wait till it gets big as an elephant, or do we want to wait and do something along the way? I mean, really, when you have all these therapies, you really have to revisit your physical, your emotional, and your spiritual venue of yourself. Because if you don't, you're really going to not be in a good place getting through this process. So I really think your book is a great, it is a really great book in that it's not text dense, as I would call. In other words, it's not black and white, word after word after word, and you're going, I don't remember what I read the page before. You are very concise. You tell a story. It's on a page or two, and it's like, boom, there it is. And I think that's the best way to go through this process.
Well, I think, I know for myself, when I was diagnosed, one of the things that I did was I started, because I am a voracious reader, I got every book I could get my hands on that talked about what it was like. And so many of them were so text-dense, is a wonderful expression, actually. And I would get halfway through it, and I would either be, I have to quit. I don't understand this, or I don't, it's too much for me to take right now. And the other kind of book that seemed to be out there was this whole inspirational, you've been given the greatest gift in the entire world, and I hope you appreciate it. And this was no gift. Gift has a receipt, and you can take it back. This is not a gift.
I think so, sometimes they always want to look at it at the back end, but nobody talks about the process, and the process is where and how you learn how to expand. It's sort of like everybody says, oh, we get these great flowers, and you go to the store, you know, and you buy a bag of seeds, but nobody told you what kind of dirt to put them in, how you're going to be able to water them, and how they're going to end up looking like the thing on the package, right? So really, that's how their spiritual books are, you know? You feel like they're all flowery, and they're all this esoteric kind of stuff, you know? And you're going, oh, my goodness, you know, oh, look at that. See, she made it. She's great, you know? And you're going, what the hell, you know? This is not my process. I'm in the middle of shit right now, you know? And that's the truth. And aren't you?
And shit is not pink.
Right. And that is so the truth. And, you know, and when your body starts to say, I am so over you and I am so done with you, what do you do? Right?
Yeah. It's like your whole system is fighting against you, and you're trying to find a path through that, and you're surrounded by people who are saying to you, you know, you just need to stay positive, and you need to, you know, here, take this pink ribbon and have a bear, and you're made to feel so guilty that you can't embrace this, that you are, you know, going through all these physical and emotional trauma, and this is supposed to be a solution. So where's the part where we're allowed to be angry, where we're allowed to be sad, where we're allowed to be happy? We can be happy. I laughed a lot through this journey. But we need that permission. We need to realize that it's just another experience, as humans, and we need to be real people while we're going through it.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when you look at other people and you start to talk, you can see the blank look on their face, and you're going, oh, hell, you're not listening to me anyway. Why am I wasting my time, right? How many times have you said that? Come on. At least 10 million, right? Please.
10 million, yep, at least. I had an interesting experience the other day, actually, with a very close friend of mine who was with me all the time I was going through this. And she, of course, has the book. She picked up the book, well, pretty much when it came out. I did not realize until last week that she hadn't read it. She said,
wow.
I couldn't. She said, I couldn't read it. She said, I just, and then she said, when I did, I had no idea what was going on, what was going through your head at the time. And she said, and I was right beside you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty powerful. I'm going, really? Like, I just figured she read it and she was there, so she got it. She honestly, even being there, didn't realize what was going on.
I think sometimes because they feel like that might open up a door to their inner emotions of, you know, hey, do I really have to be committed in paying attention and in feeling what this human is feeling next to me? Where sometimes if you wall it off, you don't allow it to touch you. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know how people say, well, I'm going to walk through the rain and I'm not going to get wet. Yeah, sure. That kind of idea, you know?
I think that
so that it doesn't touch you.
Well, I think it speaks to the whole idea that where people prefer us to be positive, too, because if I'm there and I have a smile on my face and I'm saying to you everything is great, then you're not really facing the idea of your own mortality. I think it makes you feel better. It doesn't do anything for me. And we're very much afraid of our own mortality. And when you are behind that eight ball that says, you might not make it, that's a really frightening place for you to be, and it's a frightening place for people around you to be. If this can happen to her, it can happen to anybody.
And that's really tough to be able to say, my gosh, you know. And I think a lot of people turn around and they say, hey, they run to their doctor. Hey, I got to make sure I'm okay. Don't you think people that are around you, they run out and they go and they say, I've got to go get my yearly checkup or whatever to make sure I'm not on that path. When, hey, sorry to tell you, y'all, but you know that little yearly whatever you do? That's just like a dance in the grass that's doing absolutely nothing, you know.
It does nothing. It stops nothing. It changes nothing.
Yeah, and preventative medicine is not you turn around and you're going to have a mammogram every year. That is not preventative medicine, you know. Preventative medicine is something so different than that. All that's doing is parking your butt on the bench and waiting to see if the squirrel's going to come in front of you. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense anymore.
No, it really doesn't, and it simply doesn't work. It simply doesn't work. So what do you need to do on an ongoing basis to keep yourself from, you know, and getting behind that and, you know, ending up in that position? And my oncologist actually told me I quote him actually in the book. It's not much of a quote, but he said to me, Tina, it's a crapshoot. You lost.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I did, and I think more of us are losing all the time. So what is it? What's that connection? Like, what's happening with us in this environment with what we're doing? Why are so many of us in that place now?
Yeah, and you know, I have thought about that because I've spent probably the better part of the last 10 years really going through a lot of life changes and saying, is it this? And then really densely feeling that and saying, oh, this is not it, or I'm working through this. All these life-changing, like, questions in life, you know. And I've come up, you know, and I've done a lot of, you know, the traditional healthcare, and I'm a naturopathic physician, so I've got that little wheelhouse. But I'm also, as we say, a human. I'm also a mother, you know, all these different things. And you look at it and you say, okay, so what is really going on? And we look at cancer, and as I've said in the beginning, I really feel that it's sort of an energy thing. And it's going to change, I think, it's going to evolve in so many different ways in the next several decades. We'll see. Will cancer still be there maybe in the next 100 years? We just never know. It's just that right now it has, and I think similar to the Earth, you know, we've kind of junked it all up, and now we're worried about global warming. we still don't look at, maybe that we might have had a hand in that, you know? So
yeah,
same
absolutely.
Thing with cancer, you know, is it always the human themselves that had a hand in it? Partially. Is it the environment? Partially. Is it genetics?
Yeah.
Partially. And so it's sort of like, have we souped up the sink enough so that it will stop up? That's it. Same thing as I said before with energy. It's blocked up energy. And how can you really change it or affect that? You know, everybody's trying meditation and yoga. Well, there's a start. It's a start, you know. We're giving up some of those old beliefs, those old paradigms, and it's a start. But really, there's a lot of people that are still on this path, and we have to recognize that. And I think opening up and being compassionate human beings right now is the number one thing. And if we don't do it within the next year or two, there'll be another earth crisis that will just shake us to our core, and we'll all have to start doing that.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about your journey. You know, when you got that first diagnosis, we look at it, you know, everybody says, you know, hey, okay, got it. You know, some people will drop to their knees when they get home. Others will say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to rush home and I'm going to call up my sister because she had it too so she can, you know, whatever, you know. And everybody's got a different story there, but that is their story and we should all honor that. So how did you find after you got the diagnosis that you were able to even just hear the words or recognize it?
I think it took me quite a while to process because, as I speak about in the book, my initial appointment with the doctor was all of 3 minutes. He said to me, you have breast cancer. This isn't my area. Don't look on the internet and somebody will call you. So, you know, it was literally 3 minutes later I was standing in the waiting room with and my husband was sitting there. We made the mistake of him not coming with me. We never did that again. And I just said to him, there was no tears. There was just stunned. I said to him, we have to go to the car. I can't talk here. And we got in the car, and I told him, I said, I have breast cancer. And we drove home. And I still, until I actually, a friend of mine called. I was supposed to be at a work function. And when she called me to ask me how the tests went, and she started to cry. That's when I realized, I thought, oh, yeah, this isn't good. It was like I had to face it at that point. And as I told people, it kept hitting me over and over again. But everybody reacts differently.
Yes, absolutely. And so many times, too, we try to say, oh, well, I'll just go on with my normal life and things will be okay. So let's stop for 1 second. We say about the physicians, man, don't you just wonder sometimes? You know, I went to a conference yesterday on trauma, and I live in the land of, you know, I went through Hurricane Katrina, so everybody still talks about trauma, and this year is the 10th year of it, blah, 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 you know. And here was this poor woman from Washington coming in to give the seminar, and she was standing up there saying, well, these are the things, you know, with trauma recovery after an event. And everybody in the room just wanted to just light fire on her because they're all like, are you kidding me? Dude, we know more than you. Why don't you just go home, you know? And so I think
trauma.
Right, and it's all like I think sometimes too, when you write your book, you're like, when you go to those people, you know, you can feel it and sense it there, but when you're around other people too, and it's just like, dude, don't try to tell me something that I haven't already been there. But I think your book is great because it gives them an outline, you know what I'm saying? And here you get these physicians who are kind of, oh, well, it's not my thing. And, you know, physicians always have this thing in school. Oh, we need to disconnect from the patient so we don't end up da-da-da-da-da. And I think that's the biggest crock of crap that's going to eventually dissolve, you know, because physicians are not human enough.
Yeah.
Pardon?
They are not human enough. They are.
Right.
There is this disconnect. There is this. How can you help me through this process, through this supposed healing process, if you can't connect with me, if I'm just a widget in your little system, and that's all I am is a bunch of tests and a bunch of marks on a piece of paper, then how am I supposed to trust you with my healing?
Do you know what I found the key? And there were two things. One is that they have to disconnect. And the second thing was that I had read through a physician's book. I had him as a guest on the show. And there was this one word in the middle of the book, and it was buried in there, and it wasn't repeated, but maybe once. And the word was obedient. It said the patient is obedient. And I just about, I mean, I had, oh, I was just, I was on a tirade that day. I read that. And I said, obedient, just how dare you? You know, who
yes,
are you that we should all be subservient? And I think that human beings in healthcare are really being subservient to the powers that be. And your book really, by saying this, is saying, you know, this is all I'm feeling. You know, and I think eventually from your book, you know, people will start to learn how they can change that process for them. You know, oh, well, I know this, so I'm not going to do this. I would like this to be different for me. So really it's like a stepping stone of graduated learning. Because now what you know, you'll say, hey, you know, you're going to stick me seven times, like you said in your book about getting the heating pad. Don't let them do that anymore. You know, say, no,
stop
I
them.
Know. I mean, say, I know for myself.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Ask,
I know
ask
for myself
the,
that is.
Yeah. Ask the day they, that I almost got the wrong dose. I would have
yes.
gotten it if I hadn't said to her, I want to see what you're doing. And the look
yes.
on her face was just, oh, you have no idea what this is about. And I thought,
correct.
I have enough of an idea to know whether this is right or wrong. And
mm-hmm.
I stopped her. And thank God I
yeah.
stopped her. But how many people don't? You just, you're frightened.
Right.
You're so terrified. So you just put your life in these people's hands. And
mm-hmm.
and I'm not putting down the medical profession in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
I'm
neither,
saying,
neither am I, yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just saying that there needs to be some changes there. And
yeah.
it's interesting right now in the province that I live in, they just came out with this new, Alberta Health Services just came out with this new program called Patients First, and they did a 3-year study to decide that the medical profession was not being compassionate enough to patients. And I thought, that took you 3 years?
and how many millions of dollars that you could have put into something else? Yeah, we all
exactly.
know those stories.
Yeah. Now, the ironic part about that is apparently it's going to take them another 3 years to roll it out. I don't know. I
yeah.
a friend of mine taught their 3-year-old to be polite in about 5 minutes.
Yes,
I don't think it
that's
can be
the
that
difference.
Hard.
You know, but I think so, too. We have to look at it. Now, is it maybe those physicians and those nurses and in that healthcare paradigm the same as your friend? Because they also, too, feel that if they connect it with it or if they let their sense of their feelings at all be cracked open, that they might really realize that what you have to go through is not so great. We know that it's going to be tough. We know that it's going to hurt you. And sometimes we have to wall that pain off so that you can have your own experience. And it's really a tough place to be, you know. But I think we as humans now are really having a tipping point where we're saying, I need more compassionate people around me. Can you see me? Can you hear me? I'm on this this new trek this year is, can you see me, can you hear me, and are you
yeah.
committed to listening to me?
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody can see you and look at you, but nobody is committed to listening and you know, actually being connected to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying in your book,
yeah,
you know, is
absolutely.
Like, see
absolutely.
Me, hear me, and connect to me, people,
yeah.
because this is
here
what
I am.
It's real.
I'm a human being. I have feelings. Would you
yeah.
respect that? And would you respect my intelligence enough to explain to
yeah.
me what you're doing? Like, would you turn
yeah.
that screen around so that I can see what you're doing when you're digging around with your needles? Can you, you know,
yeah.
can you do all of those things? And what I did find out, and I have, you know, I've had multitude of tests since all of this has happened. When you ask them, they do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, again,
mm-hmm.
came as a surprise to me, but I would never have had the courage to ask. And now I'm just going, you know
yeah.
what? You're going to be digging around in my body. I want to see what you're finding. And I want you to talk
yeah.
me through it. So do so, please.
So what do you think is probably the most shocking therapy or treatment in your book? And if and you can share that with our listeners, because I think sometimes people will say, I don't want to know anything about it, just drug me up and I'm good to go. Yeah, right.
Yeah, not a good plan. Don't just drug me up. Definitely for me, chemotherapy was absolutely the worst. It just blew my entire system out. I had... At one point, my hands looked like they had been dipped in a vat of acid. They literally burned from the inside out. and my nails fell off. My skin on my chest became, I called it elephant hide. I didn't know what else, how else to describe it. At one point, at one night, after I had gotten a dose, they had just changed my dosage, and I got up in the middle of the night, it was 3 a.m, and I looked in the mirror, and my face was swollen unbelievably. My eyes could barely open, and my tongue was swollen, and I looked in the mirror, and I thought to myself, you know what, this could kill me. I could stop breathing. And right. At that point, I didn't probably do the most sensible thing. I thought, I'd had enough. I went, nah, you know what, I'm either going to wake up in the morning or I'm not, but I'm going back to bed. So when I got up in the morning and my husband looked at my poor face and he said, we are going to emergency, and I looked in the mirror and I went, oh, I look better than I did last night. So I said, I'm not going. So, and I didn't. But the chemo for me, those drugs, that cocktail of drugs, was just a horrendous experience. I know that's not everybody's experience, but this was mine. And anything, I would do anything but have to go through that again.
And I think even just saying that, some people will have pause to say, what am I putting my foot into? What am I stepping my toe into this pool of experience? You know, what is it going to be for me? And just your saying is, this is what the terrain looks like, and it's the option of how you maneuver your way through that terrain. And
absolutely.
I think that's really what we're talking about today.
Where do you situate yourself? What do you actually look at? And I mm-hmm. almost didn't do chemotherapy. And there was a test I could have taken called the Oncotype DX type, which sort of does genetic mm-hmm. testing and says whether it's going to be any good or not. Like, is it really going to do you, be worth it for you, right? And I wish I had taken that test. And if I ever find myself behind that again, I would certainly do it and at least have something that says to me, you know what, this isn't going to do me any good. Because even my oncologist said to me, he said, I don't think this is doing any good for you.
Yeah, and that's tough to hear.
Yeah.
And you have to believe, too, that, you know, they're giving this message to you and you're just hearing and not hearing. Do you think you hear all along what's going on? In other words, I'm a personal patient advocate, and what I find is that when I'm sitting next to someone and the physician is talking, or, you know, the therapies and the treatments, and we're all having a conversation and we're saying what's going on and everything to the patient themselves, and sometimes the patient is like, I did not hear a word you said. I did not hear
definitely.
A word anyone said.
My husband would come with me and take notes because I would not, it was like they just washed over me. The words just washed over me, and some of them caught and some of them didn't. And he would be taking notes in the corner, and I would so, you know, if you are ever have to do anything that is with your health like that, take somebody with you. Have
you
them
really
come
need
with you.
Them.
Have them take notes. You really need them because you don't hear. You don't hear. I see a Chinese traditional medicine doctor right now, and he says you can't hear through sadness.
Yes.
And I thought it was very poignant. I think that's true.
And I think so many times we just, it's sort of like words that are out there in, like, space. You know what I mean?
yes.
I've had, different healthcare is really weird things go on in the past. And I can remember just little tiny snippets of it. Like, I had a kidney stone and I was in the hospital for 2 weeks and all these therapies and treatments and blah, blah, blah. And the only thing I can remember out of that is one day the lady said, if you don't be quiet, I'm going to put an IV in your foot, you know, for out of the whole 2 weeks. That's all I remember, you know, because you know, we're on these drugs, we're on these medications, you have brain fog, it's like the world could go to heck and I don't care, right?
Yeah, and I didn't notice that it went that way, it went there.
Yeah.
That brain fog is something else that is very much a reality when you're finished, and I they talk about chemo fog, right? And it takes a very long time to come out of that fog. You don't remember things. You don't. I got back to work and I would look down at the notes in my hands to find out what class I was supposed to be going to, because I would just go blank. I would find myself standing in the hallway going, I don't know where I'm going. And I would look at the books I was carrying and go, oh yeah, you're teaching that class, and then off I would go. Or I would be in the middle of a lecture and I would have to say to somebody, whoever was in the front row, can you hold that thought for me? Because I want to go somewhere else, and I will never get back here. So you remember the last thing I said. And they were. You know. But the fog, that brain fog, is it's nasty.
It's pretty tough. So can you tell us also about the importance of people around you and what type of people you tend to want to have around you? I'll tell you, there's some people that are just like, dude, don't ever call them when I'm sick because I don't even want them anywhere around me, right? But then there's others that you can't wait to make sure that you hope that they would be there for you.
My husband was definitely a huge support. He's very pragmatic. So he was the one that always, you know, we would go into the hospital for me to do my chemotherapy treatments, and he would get my lunch packed and my ice packed and my tea packed and my book and whatever else I needed. He was just he was just always that rock that was there. And I found that people that continued to treat me like me, that realized that I still had a sense of humor, that I was still, you know, interested in, you know, what was going on around me and, you know, bringing me small gifts, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that for me was great. The people that drove me around the bend that I could not connect with were the ones that wanted to tell me how to do what I was doing without ever having been there. And I remember having a conversation one day with somebody who was telling me what I should be doing because I was so fatigued. And I finally hung up. I couldn't stand it anymore. I went, I can't do this. And I hung up. And I called her back later and said, I'm sorry, but you can't tell me how to have cancer. You have never been here. Please don't do this anymore.
Yeah. And I think that's so vitally important, is that people that are in the process already can communicate with each other to be able to say, I tried this or I tried that, because they've been down that path. In other words, for someone who, I know for myself, I've had this, I know this is minimal, but it is my experience, but I've had migraine headaches since probably the age of 9 or 10. And I'll tell you, just in the past 10 years, I had a bout for about 2 years where I'm telling you, if I could take my head and just whack it into the wall, I would promise that would make it feel better than it did on a day-to-day basis. I mean, it was that intense.
That's
and
terrible.
No one could find anything. No one, it's like, and it got to the point where they really, you know, oh, well, you're just, I don't know, maybe you should go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And I'm like, really? For pain? You kidding me? Let me just hit you in the head too, you know? And we get to that point, you know? So then I just had to figure out my own way out of it. But, and that was something that's, you know, so out there that people just can't connect. It was sort of like, I just didn't want another person to tell me about another therapy. It was sort of like, dude, get off of it. Just go away. So
yeah,
I can understand
on,
a little bit from your perspective about that, because if another person told me, oh, well, it's just a headache, you just need a nice cool bath and a rest, it would be like, let me find the firecrackers, you know?
And it's
just like, you just want them to just go away.
Yes, you just want them to go away. And the issue with support groups, and I'm not dissing support groups because they're incredible, but I think sometimes we need to create almost our own support groups, because the ones that I found out there were really, like I said, the pink ribbon, the, wow, this is great, we're all sisters, and we're just going to smile our way through this. And I'm going, these are not the women I'm talking to in the waiting room while we're waiting for treatment, while we're waiting for, you know, radiation, whatever we're waiting. These are not the women that I'm talking to. I don't know who these women are, but this is not a place for me. And I think too, what's happening with that culture is that we're all kind of being shoved into one chute. You need to fit into this mold in order to get through this. And I want everybody's voice to be heard. I want that angry voice to be heard, and I want that sad voice to be heard. And I, you know, and you know what? If you're happy and you're positive and you're getting through this with a smile on your face, good for you. But I think we all need to be heard. Yeah.
You know, and I've said that a zillion times on this radio show before, is that you have got to feel the feelings and let anybody tell you that you have to stuff it or you have to, quote, oh, we'll just get through it, get over it. When someone says to me, get over it, I'm telling you, you better duck, you know, because, I mean, I'm so, yeah, it's like, oh, just get over it, you know, or, oh, tomorrow's another day. Oh, please, you know.
No, please,
and, yeah, and when you have, you know, like I'm sure you can experience this in the same realm, is that when I had that pain in my head, it was sort of like, you know, I just had to know that I had that pain. How deep could it go? How big could it go? What was it really centered in? Where did it really hurt my body? And I kind of like went through all of the, what I call is all of the, I went into the black hole of hell, as I call it. In other words, it was so intense. It had such a hold on me. Every part of my being, of my life, it had control over. And I'm sure, as I've read your book, that that is very similar for you, is that you really went into that too, because every bit of your experience was into this, you know, your body, your mind, your spirit, everything in your life was really into the core of this black hole. And it was sort of like, how am I going to get myself out of this?
The description of a black hole is, yes, I have been in that black hole, and it is a challenge to get out of, and it is all-encompassing, and that's all you can see and all you can feel, and getting out of it. And I think the key to part of that is really acknowledging the fact that you're in the black hole in the first place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And not saying, no, this isn't, you know, it's like being in it and saying, no, I'm fine. No, this is good. I can see.
Right.
I know exactly what I'm doing. No, I don't. I really don't. I had a conversation again with a woman, I think it was my last day of chemotherapy, and her husband were in, and they were the chair right beside me, and he was speaking to another man beside him, and he was saying all the standard trite little things about, yeah, we're going to get through this, we're just going to stay positive. And I could see the look on her face, and I thought, you're not buying this. So when he left, I leaned over and I said to her, honey, you be whatever you want to be. You want to be angry, you want to be sad, you want to scream, you want to cry, you want to laugh, you do whatever you want to. And she cried and she said, thank you.
Yes. Yep. You think how much pent-up stuff that we don't go through. I mean, the best part about the black hole, and you could take it for what it is for each your own individual circumstances, best part of the black hole is, you know what, you get to experience everything into its rawest form. You can feel anger that just wants to eke out of you like lions. You know, you get to feel pain that has such a hold on you that you swear it's going to rip your body apart. And when you can feel all of these pieces and this denseness, then you can say, okay, I'm done with you. I've experienced you enough. And it might be 6 months. It might be a year. It could be 2 days or an hour. And I think you have to say that you're entitled to that. A lot of times, you know, when I work with people, you know, and they say, oh, well, okay, good, you know, you should be getting over your grief. You should be getting over your anger. Who are they to say anything about where our path is going? If we still need to sit down and get through that, then we need to sit down and get through that. I think a lot of times when you have a significant health crisis or life-changing or altering event is when you hold it back, is when it's going to rear its head later. And that's called many times relapse, you know, things come back again. So it's best to say, you know, how dark can this black hole go? What is the color of the walls, you know? And let me dig a little hole with my finger through the wall to see if I can get my butt out of here. And really the only way out is up.
Yes. And people do tell you your time frame of what you should be feeling or how you should be feeling and why aren't you over that yet.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine told me she is still in mourning for her breast.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to find her own way through that. And she is. And by even acknowledging the fact that she feels that way, it simply makes her feel better that this isn't my reality right now. I'm mourning for this. And I have to find my way through it. But I'm not going to find my way through it by ignoring it.
Right.
I'm simply going to be stuck.
But I think the most important thing about, you know, finding your way through it is that you are actively maneuvering your way, even if it's a lateral move, even if you're just like moving laterally, you're still feeling the same, but you still are moving in it, and that's okay. It's the problem is when we get stuck. and we're stuck, yes. and we just don't move through. You know, move. In other words, you can be, you know, have your feet in cement, but you could still move your arms. You know, so that lateral move
that
is still okay. Yes, the lateral move is still okay. So in other words, if yesterday I just screamed for 10 minutes and today I feel like screaming for 10 hours, so be it. That's a lateral move. Eventually you will say, okay, you know, I think I'm done with that, and then go to the next. And, you know, I think in your book you share so many times, you know, you say about the medications, the treatments, the processes, and you say, you know, this is really, really not good, and this is really, really dark, and this is really, really difficult. And that experience is what people need to say, okay. And then they say, okay, I can get through this. And just,
yes.
You know, in other words, your book is almost like a best friend that has already been there for a lot of people. You know,
I had somebody else describe it as that the other day.
Yeah, I don't want to hear Susie Homemaker come in with me tell me about her experience. I want to know the dark side of the experience, and I think your book is not quite the dark side, but I mean, I don't want to label it, but what I'm saying, it is the reality of the side. And I think the reality is what a lot of times people want as their companion. Don't you think?
Well, for me, I had to have reality. I'm not good with sugarcoating. So just give me the worst case scenario, and it's not that I'm not I'm actually, you know, I love to laugh, I love to have fun, I love to do all of those things, but I definitely need to have the whole idea that I know what's going to happen to me. So
yeah.
You know, that's it simply needs to.
Oops. And we just lost Tina, and Tina will be calling back in just a minute. Again, Tina's book is called Not in the Pink. It is available online, and her website is on the bottom of today's show page. You'll be able to click directly on the link to go directly to the page where you'll be able to find out more information about purchasing the book and about Tina. This book is definitely a core kind of story where you'll be able to find out more information about the breast cancer journey of Tina. Let me tell you the one thing about this is that you say if you're really scared, it might make you more scared. But if you're also super fearful, it may say it's going to help give me an insight. In other words, when you open up that big door, you don't feel like, you know, you're going to kindergarten and you have no idea what this big world is all about. You know, it'll say in kindergarten, you're going to have lunch, you're going to draw, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You know, in Tina's book, it says, okay, when you open up the door to the radiation room, this is what happened to me. There's a chemo room, this is what happened to me. Surgery, this is what happened to me. And oh, those drains. Oh, Lord, let's talk about those drains. So, Tina, welcome back to the show. Tina, can you tell us a little bit about the actual process? I mean, like, as I just said, Lord, those drains, right? Don't you just want to say, really, can it all come out of me or can it not, right?
Yeah, even everything is so unfamiliar to you. I mean,
yes.
we just can't. It's so difficult to process. I remember being in these rooms, and you know, the radiation room, and it was massive and cold.
Yeah.
And there's people in there, and you don't know who they are, and you don't know what's happening to you. And some of them are good about answering your questions, and some of them are not so good. And at least if you had read something that would say, "I walked into a room that was the size of an amphitheater, and I'm the only one in it," you realize.
Yeah.
That somebody else is feeling the same fear that you have right now. So maybe if you knew that was going to happen, it wouldn't be as bad. You'd be saying, "Oh yeah, you know, that's what she said. She said these rooms were cold and huge, and felt inhuman.
Right.
That's what I feel like." And I know at one point I wondered what would happen if I ran. And I spoke to my mother about that. My mother had breast cancer as well. And she laughed. She said to me, "That's exactly what I wanted to do." She said, "I got in there and I thought, I'm just going to run. I'm just going to bolt. I wonder if they'll chase me."
And, yeah,
and it was so ironic that she's, I don't ever remember her telling me that when she was going through it. But maybe if you know that feeling that you might want to run, or you might want to smack somebody because of what they said to you, you realize you're not alone. You're not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah, and you know, so many times when you go into these therapy rooms, you know, like you said about it being cold, if you had already read your book and you knew it was going to be cold in there and you walked in and it was freezing cold, you know, you could turn around and say, ha, she was right, this damn room is freezing. Don't you think everybody in the room would sit there and say, oh my gosh, yeah, isn't it funny? Do you know what I mean? In other words,
yes.
We keep our inner feelings so tight to us. What if you walked in a room and said, yeah, shit, it's just as cold as she said it was going to be, right? Can you imagine
really cold
that
in
would
this room.
Lighten? Right, like it would lighten each person in there and say, yeah, it is. Let me tell you about this other thing that's going to go on, you know? So in other words, it opens the door to communication and conversation, but bigger thing, it opens the door to connection. And I think sometimes we hold ourselves off so much. You know, it's like you've got to connect with somebody.
Oh, and connection, I think, is so important in the whole healing part of this, too. If you hold yourself off and deny everything that's happened to you, you don't have a hope. I mean, you refer to it as being moving out of that stuck energy, right? If you can't acknowledge it, you're not going anywhere. And I think for me, this book, this whole thing was to acknowledge not just me, but anybody who might be going through this or, like I said, whose family might have to deal with this, that you're acknowledging all of that pain and all of that, everything that could happen to you, and giving yourself the permission to say, okay, this did happen. It was a horrible, awful thing. Now what?
And I think that's important to say that this is what's going to, quote, happen to you. This is not what's been dumped on. Sometimes some people say, you know, oh, my God, why are they doing this to me? Rather, it's they aren't doing it to you. Rather, it's the experience you're going through, which is a big difference. And also, too, to be able to say, you know, when after you've written the book, is to look back and say, wow, I made it through that. Wow, you know, that was definitely, you know, that was not only a bump in the road, it wasn't even a boulder, it was like a volcano, you know. It was just something that my gosh, you know, I look where I am, and I did make it through that.
I had to be very careful when I, because it took a while before the book was printed, obviously. I was diagnosed in 2011. I went through treatments, and then I was finished in the summer of 2012. I had been working on the images, and, you know, it really hadn't even coalesced into the idea of a book yet. But I had to be very careful as I progressed with it, putting it together, that I did not go back and rewrite from where I am now.
That
was tempting because I would read it and go, oh my God, can I say that? And I have to. So I have to be extremely careful about the language and about not softening it in some way and saying, oh, well, this wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And yes, it was. But where I am now compared to there, that's a different thing entirely.
And I think that's very important to also note is that we try to romanticize our past. That's a bad word, but it's a similar word. What I'm trying to say is we look back at the past and we don't feel, you know, in other words, we try to change the story behind us. So just as you said, you know, don't change the story behind you. That's exactly how you felt at that time. That's exactly what your words were on your wall. And use those, you know, to put together this book. So we don't want to always go back and say, well, let's take out that word suffering, or maybe pain shouldn't be there, or, you know, maybe this word, you know, I'm really going to check out. Maybe we should take that out. That sounds too vulnerable. It sounds too human. It sounds too exposed, or maybe it's too harsh. And we don't really want to do that with our story. We really want to take our story just as, you know, exposed and raw as it is, and I think your book is all about that.
Yes, and raw is probably a description that has been used a lot, and I certainly, that's what I wanted. I tried very hard not to, like I said, go back and tamper it down and say, okay, well, you know, I could say this a little more nicely, or I could, it is a raw and a human and experience that I hope that many, many of your listeners never have to go through. But that's what it's like. It is raw. It is human. It is challenging. It is difficult. It is a black hole. I actually really like that description.
Yeah. But then, you know, you're still here to talk with us today. So you obviously are on the other side of that black hole. And, you know, while we don't want to turn around and, you know, we're going to pink everything in the house to, you know, say how you got there, just say, you know, as I always say at the end of every single show that I do on the radio, the minute you can get up in the morning, you open your eyes, you know, before you put your feet on the floor, say, thank you, God, for today. Because really, you got to this point, right?
I am here, I am standing, and I am fond of saying I didn't survive because I was positive, I survived because I was too stubborn to die.
Right, you were tenacious and resilient.
Exactly, whatever it is that you need to be to get
right.
through it. And
yeah.
And I am grateful for every day that I have and all the things that have come about because of it. And, you know, I mean, it's been a ride. That's all I can say. It's been a ride. Not one I would have bought a ticket for, but
right.
Hey. We
yes,
don't always get to
absolutely.
Choose.
Absolutely. And I think you've learned a lot probably along the way, but that's exactly what your book about is sharing what you've learned and how you felt so that others can also learn from that. I think sometimes when you know, we'll go back to the analogy, as we said in the beginning of the show, about buying the package of seeds because we like the picture of the flower on the front. You know, it's really about saying, I'm going to take that, you know, my bag of seeds now, which is your book, and say, you know, share it with other people so that they can be able to grow their own flower from it, so that they can be able to be on the other side of it. They can get out of the black hole. They will make it through, and it will be okay, you know. Sometimes I think we look at it and we say spouses are with us. Just in closing, we'll touch on this, and we say, well, you know, oh, my spouse is with me all the time. They really got it. But sometimes they don't really get it, and sometimes they don't want to, and they wall their own selves off. So really, by sharing this book, I think this book is a great book to be shared, you know, to people that are on the path, you know, some people that are on different paths, but also those people that really just, hey, you know, this is what I'm going through. Maybe you can't voice it yourself, but maybe the book will be able to voice some of it and open up the door to conversation. Or just so people will just say, you know, oh, gosh, you know, I didn't realize, I'm sorry. Or how can I help you? Or how can I be more present? Or maybe this is something I can't help you with, but I can clean your house for you. You know what I mean? They may, and you know, that's a great thing, right?
Yep. And I think that's people always want to do something. They, you know, and actually, it's funny that you hit on the let me clean your house for you. Oh, mm-hmm. You know what? If you want to do something for somebody who has cancer, do that for them. Come over, clean up the house, bring them soup so they can have it frozen in the freezer. You know,
mm-hmm.
do things that make their lives easier, and just be there.
Yeah.
Just listen. Yeah.
And sometimes, in all honesty too, and we'll say this in closing, is that if you are a person who cannot deal with this process because of your own fears, you can clean the house when they're gone to the hospital. You can clean the house when they're gone to treatment or therapy. You can walk their dog in the middle of the night when they're sleeping. You can bring over groceries and have them there in the morning and have someone else deliver them. In other words, they still know that you're connected, but that you don't always, everybody doesn't have to be engaged in your process. Because you really don't want everybody engaged in it. In other words, you don't want this full circle. But, you know, everybody can play a part in that outside circle, and it's just as important. So I really think that's
really
important
is.
Also.
Yeah, excellent point.
Tina, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you share with our listeners about your website and a little more information where they could find out about you? That would be great.
Sure. My website is called notinthepink.ca. And the book is available for sale on the website. It is also available with Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, and the Canadian bookstores are McNally Robinson. And it is just coming out in the next 2 days as an e-book through Kindle. And it is also an iBook. So there are EPUB versions available. So that's something that's just happened in the last week. So if you are the type of person that does EPUB, there it is. And I can also be found at tinamartel.com, which is my artwork.
Fabulous. Well, Tina, it's such a pleasure to have you with us. I thank you for really sharing your book because I think potentially it should be in almost every type of healthcare venue out there, or every type practitioner should have it in their office to be able to even share and say, you know, it's going to be okay. We're going to walk you through, because look at what it really looks like. And, you know, being honest and not saying, oh, don't worry, just go to the test. You are going to worry. It's going to be tough. And really taking the cloak and dagger, I think, off of the situation and really saying, exposing it for what it is, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. The, what did you say? The lid off the tin.
Yep.
Yep. We ripped it off.
Yep. Well, thank you so much, Tina, for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. If you'd like to find out more information about Tina Martell and her book, the link is on the bottom of today's show page. And as we said in the show, please do get this book. If you are on the path, if you know others that are on the path, if you know others that are helping other people, it's always something to be able to be a little bit more informed and say, oh my gosh, I had no clue. So thank you so much for joining us today. Have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeannettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeannette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone or the television remote or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.